Thank you for choosing to listen to the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast. In a myriad and plethora of other podcast conversations you could be choosing, we are really grateful that you chose to click on our link. And why should you choose to listen to the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast? Well, not least because we have honest, open, insightful conversations with leaders from across the recruitment industry and beyond. We often invite people on who are leaders and experts in markets and sectors that we believe we can all truly learn from. Just a word of thanks to our sponsor, Pager, and to our proud partners, Needy and Inclusion Crowd, and a warm welcome to our new partner, Keybridge IT. More about all of those later on in the show. So without further ado, let's get to know this week's guest. This is Leisha Holmes, and I'm your host on the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast. And I'm joined today by Jamie Burrows, who is a lifelong recruitment industry stalwart and now a trainer and coach. And we're going to talk about two of my favourite topics ever. Genuinely, if you really want to know what my favourite topics are that get me going, it's all about how being a billing manager is one of the hardest jobs in recruitment. I've been there, I've done it. I'm telling you, it is definitely the hardest job in recruitment. And then the second one is top billers. How do we know we are one? How do we become one? How do we know whether to hire one or who they are? You are absolutely going to join me in what is Jamie's first ever podcast appearance, actually, when we recorded this in May 2024. So I really hope you enjoy the episode. I want to know what you think. There's a few little contentious points in there as well. We're a little bit unpopular with opinion on some stuff. So we want to see in comments what you think. So without further ado, let's jump in. We are so proud at the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast to be sponsored by Pager. Pager helps recruiters to build personal brands, to identify new business opportunities, to attract those hard to find candidates, and to basically have better conversations. Now, you will have a large network that you want to build credibility with on LinkedIn, and sometimes posting content every day feels impossible. Now, that changes once you have Pager. Pager provides you with the ideas, the content, and the scheduling capability to produce daily content to build out your own personal brand in minutes. And for business development too. Pager identifies companies that are advertising jobs, have key hiring indicators such as funding rounds, mergers, acquisitions, or senior appointments, and then alerts you to this daily. Pager also enables you to write candidate-centric job adverts without bias in seconds. So once you advertise your job, Pager will then automatically create a branded post and publish it to LinkedIn without you even having to lift a finger. So when you want to actively source candidates, you can create complex Boolean strings in seconds. All you need to do is to provide the job title and location. Now, Pager is making thousands and thousands of recruiters smarter and faster. For more information, click on the link pager.co to book your demo, and remember to mention the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast when inquiring. Now, back to the episode. This is Leisha Holmes, and I'm your host on the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast. And I am so excited to welcome to our global community today somebody who I had the absolute privilege to meet in real life. We actually met up north in Manchester for an event arranged by Simon Lewis, which was RecConnect. And we got chatting, and he was one of the speakers. He went down really well, I have to say. I was sat in the audience, and it was a fantastic presentation. And I was like, ooh, really like him to come on the podcast. And then he actually dropped me a message. So it worked out really well in the end. So without further ado, this is Jamie Burrows, and he's a trainer and coach to the recruitment industry. Welcome to you today, all the way down in London, I believe, Jamie.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. So there'll be lots of people in our global community today who'll be thinking, ooh, who's this guest? So before they start clicking on LinkedIn, give us a potted history as to what your background has been and how you are finding yourself here today.
Yeah, so as you described, I'm a trainer and coach for the recruitment industry. How did I find myself here? I worked in retail, and I was sacked. That's probably a story for another day. And
wow,
that's a pub story. I was politely asked to leave my job in retail, and I'd heard all of the stories, as you often do, about people earning 70 grand in your first year as a recruiter. And that felt like something that I wanted to be part of. I quickly discovered you don't earn 70 grand. Well, you certainly didn't then earn 70 grand in your first year, but I did very well. And I did construction recruitment for about 4 years. That company was then bought by Randstad. And as you can probably imagine, it changed ever so slightly when it became part of the Randstad corporate machine. So eventually, after about 4.5 years, I left that business and did an education startup with two mates. And we took that from three of us in the shed in their back garden. We grew that to 30 odd people.
Wow.
It was a great business. That business it still exists today and is flourishing. I left there in 2018. I did an 18-month stint as a sales director in another education recruitment business in a much, much larger business. And I suppose it was over those two roles, latterly in the startup and then as a sales director, that I really got involved in doing a lot more training, a lot more coaching, with everything really from sort of grad rookie level up to billing managers, and putting structures in place for those people to continue to learn and develop. Mm. And eventually I bit the bullet and set up the training business that I run now. And that was at the end of 2019.
All right, just before COVID hit.
Yeah, yeah.
Were you already gearing up to be an online, or were you going to be a real life trainer?
No, I've always been a real in-person person.
Yeah.
And yeah, the COVID thing kind of knocked me for six, really, because it's obviously completely out of the blue, as it was for everyone. But there was the immediate thing of I'd launched the business in November, December 2019. It was starting to look good and clients on board, and then obviously bang, everything kind of cancelled. And so it was a bit of a weird time, but what I did do, I suppose, quite well, and like lots of people did actually, is I did loads for free during that period.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that built a level of reciprocity maybe, but also it meant I was still present throughout there. And actually when we came out at the end of COVID, things just went boom.
There was a lot of serendipity around at the time, wasn't there? That's for sure. But you know, I felt you, I'm such an empath. When you said that at the start of 2019, we were absolutely flying January and February. And I remember a couple of clients saying, what are you doing to prepare for COVID? And I was like, China, I'd be all right, not coming here. And you look back on that, I look back on that conversation, I'm actually a bit embarrassed now. But you know, I think that must have been quite a sort of a time where you had to, I guess you were very vulnerable, you know, new business, but you probably had a lot of learning to do yourself, which you presumably then, that can be a real foundation for empathy with leaders when you're going out and visiting businesses and understanding certainly the pain points they'll have gone through definitely the last 18 months, because it's been a very challenging time as we record this now midway through 2024. It's been a really challenging, you know, tumultuous time, really, even like we had the peak of 2022. And then, of course, it's been kind of, you know, people have maybe relaxing where they're sort of focusing. I mean, have you seen people generally wanting to focus more on training and development, or are people seeing it as a plea time and not the latter, that it's a luxury?
I think there's a mix of both, actually. I think people from a marketing perspective will probably tell you a similar thing, that what I found is that 21, 22 were like fantastic times for everyone. And some of the businesses that I'm working with were using or saw training as a way to maximize performance. How can we get even more out of this fantastic market?
Yeah.
There were some people, if I'm being completely honest, that probably were looking at it and going, we've got money, we should probably do training. Let's do that. And then 23 and like into 24 now, you've got some people that have gone, we can't afford to train people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's other people that are looking at it that are saying, we need to train our way out of this. And then I'm sure there's others with their own opinions, but
my opinion. Don't have an erratic strategy to two things that always get waylaid when there's a recession or there's a challenging market. The two things that always fall victim are training and development and marketing. And to me, if you have that erratic view where it's a nice to have and a luxury, you're never going to propel and really go for it when the market's flying, and then take advantage when the market isn't flying. The companies that I see that really flourish continuously, even when, like, if I look back over the last 18 months, are the ones that have a training and development strategy. They continuously invest in their people, even the ones that are doing really well and are flying. They're saying, like, you know, what can we do to improve? They're not the ones that retrospectively are saying, oh shit, we better get a business development training strategy in place when the market's not great. So I imagine you've kind of, do you have to pick up the pieces from those companies?
Sometimes, mm. But and the truth is, if it's picking up the pieces, that's all right, as long as everyone's transparent of, listen, we've neglected this, we've done nothing
because
it was booming, and we now get a strategy and a structure in place for how we go and win new business. Yeah, of course, like, absolutely we can. I think they're, and not very often, but recruitment can be quite ego-driven, and sometimes there is a, what you say about picking up the pieces, business owners don't always want to tell you about all the pieces that need picking up, and there can be a bit of a mask of, oh yeah, no, we're doing fine and we're doing this, and actually once you get under the skin of it, it's maybe not quite as it seems.
But I imagine if they're calling you, or if they're calling even me, they're opening the bonnet and their business and going, we know that something's not quite right here, something's a bit broken or missing. And I think that's absolutely fine. And, you know, I think that there's no shame in that at all. I'm a big believer in there should be no shame in anything. We're always all learning. And that includes business owners too, by the way. So you're coming at it from the viewpoint that your business was established based on the fact that you'd obviously, you know, been very successful in recruitment yourself, but you had a real passion for training and development. And I believe that your flagship training program focuses more on the body of people, the group of people that I personally think have the toughest job in recruitment, which is the sort of billing managers. So can we just contextualize that? What do you see as that layer in recruitment? Like, where are we in terms of what is a billing manager, and why do you think, maybe you disagree with me, why is it a challenging job?
I completely agree with you. I think it's by far and away the hardest job. If nothing else, because it's two jobs. It's the what typically happens, and I'm not sure anyone listening to this will be surprised, but typically what happens, or I see happen, is you're a really good recruiter. Now, because you're so good at recruitment, here's all these other people to look after, manage, train, and lead, and get them to do what you do. And the truth is, for lots of those people, that is not their skill set, or it's not yet their skill set. And they're often thrown in the deep end with very little direction, so no training. And there's no blame associated with this. This isn't a finger-pointing exercise. I'm just reporting what I see. But I think the reason for it is because the people that went before them, that's how they were treated. And it becomes this self-perpetuating sort of never-ending cycle of, well, that's just what we do in recruitment. But it doesn't have to be like that. And I think with just a level of support or additional support, lots of those people can become leaders, or they can make a decision that this is not for me. And the one of the painful things that you see is, or I see, is a really good biller transitioned or pushed into a billing manager, team leader type role. And then they go, sod this, I'll leave. And they're phoning people like you going, you need to get me out of here. This isn't what I signed up for.
Yeah.
And actually, there was like a consultative process of, look, this is where we see you. This is where we think you'd be great. We're going to support you on that journey. This is what it would be like. Yes, it will be hard. And at the end of it, it'll be massively rewarding. And throughout, there'll be huge rewards. But here's the support. Here's the training to get you where you need to be.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think I've always thought it's the most accidental hero job in recruitment, because that tends to be. And I'm being very disingenuous, by the way, purposefully as the host, but I think that is very common, probably more common in those companies that, which was my experience actually, when I became a billing manager, they hired me to be a billing manager and put me on a program. But actually, when I look back, they genuinely made sure all the foundations were in place, and then they gently added more people to my, I guess, my accountability. But I think for most people, it's not even, and I look back now and it's probably still very clunky, but we're talking 20 odd years ago. So I think it will resonate with a lot of people. And I know it wasn't a flippant remark. For most people, where they are not being invested in from a training and development point of view, as they move into and transition, they are going to call a rec because they think that's their way out of it. So if when it comes to you partnering your clients on how to ensure the strategy is in place, what measures do leaders that are listening need to have in place to ensure that they've got the structure right for the succession plan to create their own billing managers rather than hiring them in externally?
I think there's actually a piece that comes before that, and I'm running this for several clients at the moment, or a version of, is a future leaders type program where someone that's maybe senior consultant level can enter a training room for half a day, or maybe like a series of half day programs where they learn what it's actually going to be like and what are some of the problems that you face, what's the shit you have to deal with, and actually, do you want this? Like, does that sound like something that might interest you? And if it's a no, that's okay. We can revisit this in the future, or maybe it's like a absolutely no way, never. But giving people a taster of what might be on the other side, rather than just a straight away, do you want to do this or not? Or we need you to do this. So I think that's the first bit. And then I think there's that the next piece is when someone does agree or decide that that's what they want from their career, that there's structured support throughout that. And that everyone knows what that looks like. What's the training? What's the gaps in my knowledge? How do we fill those gaps? And then what's the ongoing training support? What does that look like?
So it's managing the expectations, but also having a parachute available for people that maybe start that journey and realize you don't know until you've done it. It's not like being a parent where you don't get to go send them back. You can actually turn around and go, there should be a safety net, right? This isn't actually what I want, but what options do you see available to individuals like that? I mean, you can transition into a principal consultant role, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, like most of the businesses I work with would certainly not turn down a high billing individual contributor that can self-sufficient and sit and do their own thing and generate 300-400 grand a year. Like, great. I think there's a position for those types of people in most businesses. So definitely. Yeah, like you say, as long as there's the opportunity to step back if it's not quite right. I think there's some balance there of making sure they've given it a fair crack, and they've you wouldn't want someone to go and do it for 2 weeks and go, no, do you know, actually I had a confrontational conversation, didn't know how to deal with it, this isn't for me. I think that there's probably got to be some balance, but again, that comes back to clear communication, everyone on the same page of this is what it's going to look like, and this is where you can get support, and if this doesn't work, this is what's going to happen. But there's agreed, like, a verbal contract, if you like, between
with managing expectations. And I think that the segue from being just a biller to then being responsible for other people is one that, you know, we shouldn't underestimate. So I don't know if it's even fair to ask you this question, but in your experience, those that have manifested brilliantly as a billing manager, what qualities or assets or skills do you think makes the best people to become billing managers? Like, what do you see in them that we could spot potentially as leaders, or in ourselves, of course?
And I think there's a few things. I think so, like there's hard skills, and then there's soft skills or human skills. I think one of the first things is time management. In fact, it's not time management, it's priority management. Like, knowing how to manage my priorities and what is a priority. In a really simple form, going back to that Eisenhower matrix of urgent and important that everyone's probably seen, and being able to use that to plan and prioritize your day. I think emotional intelligence as a leader is essential, because if you don't have that, trying to manage different personalities is impossible. Trying to motivate different personalities is impossible. And there's like this, I don't know where it comes from, but this almost rule that you should treat everyone the same. And I just call bullshit on that. It doesn't work. You treat everyone the same. Actually, different people require very, very different things, and having the emotional intelligence to understand what that person needs from you is different to what that person needs from you, and being able to do that. So I think that's like that's not an exhaustive list, obviously, but that's some of the things I think about. I think having like a a vision for actually what you want to be as a leader and what you want your team to achieve, I think is really, really important. I'm a massive, massive advocate for coaching as a leadership tool. So not just telling people what to do all of the time, creating an environment and a team where people produce their own solutions. And in the long term, that saves you so much time. If you've got a team of people that come to you and say, I've got this problem and I think this is what I need to do about it, that's much better than people going, can you fight this fire for me?
Which very often is the lack of delegation skills, going back to your very first point made, in which I think the blanket of sort of time management and prioritization is the biggest fall down I've seen personally when I've worked with other billing managers or I've heard feedback on, because that's where, you know, learning how to do that and what that creates in terms of trust, you know, and it all comes down to the communication again. It's actually multifaceted, that first point you made, but I think that tends to be where people fail, because that's not something that they either are aware of or know how to manage themselves.
Yeah, completely agree. So I think, look, there's lots to it. Then there's things that like the harder skills that maybe later down the line people need to be taught, and like very few people at senior consultant level would have ever been exposed to a P&L.
I was going to say the P&L, the balance sheet, the sort of understanding the figures, which is, you know, I actually think that when we first set the clock back to the beginning of time in recruitment, we should have made everyone run their desk like a little microcosm of a business in P&L, but that's a whole different podcast. And I want to add to your list, if I may, as well as commerciality, because I think that's really important as a billing manager. I think to be successful in recruitment, I think you have to be commercial. But I think, and I don't know if you're going to agree with me on this word in its truest sense, I think you're quite altruistic. You'll probably get, you know, you will gift some of your business to your consultants to get them up and running. You know, you're not going to be, I think the best billing managers are not those that go, hang on, that was my candidate and that was my job. It's like, it's for the greater good. What are your thoughts on that?
I think absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think back to the first business that I worked in, the first recruitment business. And when I think back to it now, pretty much everyone was given their first deal.
Yeah. And
you do, maybe didn't realize it at the time, but it was contract. But I was definitely like handed my first contract. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize it. I thought I'd done it. But actually that was my team leader at the time putting me in a position of like got the confidence boost and support and all of the stuff that you just spoke about there. And I think that's a really important quality.
Yeah, I do. I genuinely do. And I think to last in recruitment, I think you have to be generous in nature to be a successful recruiter, full stop. But I think to become a leader of people, you are interested in and you are motivated by them flourishing, and the only way they will flourish is occasionally you know you are the bigger person, I suppose, you've got more experience than them, and I think it often gets overlooked. I really do. I don't think many people have ever come to me and said, we want someone who's quite altruistic. Well, how do you demonstrate that? Yeah. But I do think it's something that if you recognize that in yourself, you will make a really strong leader who, when you're feeling a little bit under the cosh by all the other elements that you have to do, that's what will possibly drive you. You know, you talked about values match. Your values as a leader, you have to match the business broader values. But I think when you're creating your own team, that's what will define you and hopefully make you an award-winning team, the best team in the business.
Yeah, and that's like the values thing, I think, is massive. Mm. Like, it's so, so important. It's one of the first exercises we do in one of the programs, is that getting really clear on what are your values as a leader. And like knowing yourself, and then you can behave in an appropriate way and conduct yourself in an appropriate way.
I remember that from what you did at Recruit at the Rec Connect event. I remember that bit. That's what really stood out for me, the value side, because I just think I turn the clock back, like, because you've been doing recruitment a very long time too. Can you imagine talking about stuff like that in the 90s or the noughties? Like, people have gone, what bullshit? What are you smoking, love? Get on the phone, get your Yellow Pages back out. No, I think it's really important. And it would be remiss of me to not ask you this, but from a remuneration point of view, if we're really wanting to incentivize our billing managers, how do you believe they should be incentivized from a financial perspective?
I don't think there's a one size fits all.
Okay.
But I And I've seen variations of it that are very different remuneration schemes that have worked really, really effectively. I think what I would say is I think in my experience, a constant stream of income for the additional work that you do, rather than you get this bonus at the end of the year, it feels too far away.
Yeah.
As long as there's a constant thing of, yes, it's hard at times, yes, it's a bit shit, but I'm getting rewarded for the additional work, input, effort that I'm putting in. I think that has to be a gradual thing. But I think there's lots of different ways of doing it.
There are. I mean, I'm sorry, because that's like someone saying, what's the best commission scheme? It's like, how many ways is it going to cut? I hate that expression. But I agree with what you've said there. And I think, again, from the other side of the desk, very often I get a lot of billing managers who come to me covertly because they don't feel they're being rewarded effectively. Their personal billings have been compromised because of the more people in their business, which is the right way to model it. But I think it's very important. I personally think some of the better ones are, you know, you're obviously still going to earn your personal commission because you're still billing as a manager. Never stop billing anyone. Never stop billing. Is a quarterly scheme based on, you know, profit. And then that way you're then incentivizing people to understand about running their own microcosm. And it should be fair. It's like any scheme, it's any reward scheme in recruitment. It should always be fair. And that person should feel like they are being rewarded for their efforts. I've seen some schemes out there where per head you get an extra additional X amount on your salary. I think that's also a recognition that for that head, you're probably going to lose that in your own personal commission. So I think all these things are, you know, I'm sure you're happy to speak to potential clients about that, as am I. But just as a point made, I think that we're both agreeing that there should definitely be financial reward for growing a bit, for growing your team.
I think there's two really important things you mentioned there. And I think the... my starting point for this would be, if this person is going to look after two additional people, how many hours do you expect that to take from their week? And then how much money do you expect them to earn additionally? And do those two things match up? So it's going to take 3 days a month total of their time, and you're going to reward them with an extra 100 quid. Well, that doesn't balance out, right?
Nope.
So I think that's the first thing. The other thing you said there that I think's very few businesses do this, but it's so, so important, is if possible, and it's one of the things I changed in the previous business, if you can start to reward your team leaders based on net contribution, you're in a much better place. Because it becomes, like we said there, you're a team leader, you've never been exposed to a P&L, and you go, well, I've got my consultant, and they did $5,000 last month. Go, great, but actually they cost us $4,995, so we've got £5 of net contribution. Let's reward you on that. I think actually from an understanding how a business runs perspective, that's a better learning, I think.
I think so. And I think the other reason it does that is that it has such a cascade effect on the language that you use as a leader when it comes to agreeing terms with your clients, you know, squeezing an extra few percent out of each client, because actually that will absolutely go on your bottom line. It's not going to cost you any more money. We're not talking about not buying coffee for the office here. We're talking about making more money at the top end of it. So I personally think that's the right way to do it. And I'm sure that there'll be lots of debate when we've discussed that. The other things that I want to talk to you about today is the Billy Big Balls. Don't know if you're listening to this now and you are the biggest biller in your business, but I want to ask you, and I am absolutely going to sort of pinpoint you on this. What does a big biller look like these days? Let's talk numbers. Let's talk perm and contracts. And I realise it's still quite generic, but I want figures off you as to what you think that looks like.
So it's so wide reaching, right?
I know.
What good looks like in one business is completely different to what
it
looks like in another business. The company I'm with tomorrow, last year they averaged $750,000 a head.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. They're a phenomenal business. And I look at that, and that's the highest performing team that I've worked with. Like those are big, 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 big numbers. There's also a business that I work with that their average margin is £1.27. And so the volume that you have to put out in there, and for someone to go and do 200 grand in that business, It is hard, like
that's
really,
a lot
really
of
hard.
hours.
Yeah, it's loads, and they've got a guy in that business that does 350 a year, and so like I think that's phenomenal levels of performance in that in that industry. And then you've got these guys over here doing those sorts of numbers. I'm not sure, and I know this makes it sound like I'm just trying to like not answer the question, but I don't think I can put a number on that's what a big biller should be doing. Because I think it's so dependent on the industry that you're serving.
There are nuances, I'm sorry, I was chuckling away because I get asked it all the time, and it's contextual, because you get some who maybe those 750 billers, by the way, that's absolutely fucking awesome, bravo to you guys, but also is the guy that's doing 300 grand in a £1.26 an hour margin company. You know, that's a lot of work. I've placed people who've done, you know, relatively low level stuff, and they're billing, you know, same sort of 300-400 grand in. I'm like, how many placements is that a year? Just imagine if you were doing that in a higher value market. So I think it's always contextual. Okay, let's answer it in a different way, because I imagine this will probably be not easier to answer, but I can hopefully pinpoint you. How do we know whether we've either got the potential to become a big biller in our business as recruiters ourselves? And then the second part, so part B is, as leaders, how do we spot future big billers when we're interviewing them?
Great question. So I think there's a couple of things that you can spot that people bring to the table. I think there's some things that you can, there's definitely things you can teach people. That emotional intelligence thing comes up again, that if you want to win friends and influence people, candidates, clients, whoever they might be, you need emotional intelligence, or a high level of emotional intelligence. And that's not a given. Like, there's not lots of people that have that. It is something you can learn. But that, I think that's important. Commercial awareness, I think, is a massive thing. Someone that can spot a commercial opportunity, and then decide what they need to do with that, whether that's in conversation with someone else, but actually spotting the opportunity in the first place, or having that awareness, I think is really important. And maybe this leads into it. I think I like people that are curious, people that are like constantly curious about their market, about curious about people, what makes people tick, and like having this like thirst for knowledge. I'm yet to meet someone that builds loads and loads of money that doesn't read a lot or consume content around personal development. It's like, I think that can be really insightful. When you can get this interview stage, you ask someone to interview, what was the last book you read? And depending on what they answer, I think can probably give you some insight into that stuff. I think after that, I think there's a few things that are really important. I think knowing or being able to create a correlation between your activity and what that results in, your metrics, your ratios, call them what you will. But if I do this, I should get this. And we'll all see this. Groups coming in, opening a laptop, and not even know where they're going to start or why they're doing what they're doing. Actually knowing, if I do this activity, the science tells me that actually I should get this because I've worked on my ratios and my metrics. That's really important. You can teach someone that. I think more important, like something that's becoming more and more important, is the ability to write. Like when I started in recruitment, it didn't matter really if you could spell. And now, because 90% of your relationships will start with a telephone.
It was on the phone.
Truth is, like now, 90% of them probably start with a keyboard, and the telephone comes after. That's not to say that's not the most powerful piece of kit that we still have. It is, but the ability to write is essential. Kind of mentioned it earlier, but the ability to communicate with different people is essential, and then influencing the thinking and behaviours of other people. And maybe that loops back into, you've got to have that emotional intelligence thing before you can...
I think that's your starting point. Can I also add one thing, which I think has become a little bit of a dirty word. Well, it's two words, actually. But it's hard work. And the problem you've got, the disconnect you've got, is that if you are a new recruiter and you're sat there watching, you know, the top biller in the business, they've reached their elite status, before you joined. So you won't have seen the 12-hour days, you won't have seen the 50 calls, you won't have seen them working every hour, speaking to all the dud candidates to get to the good ones, you know. And when they become the top biller, they've honed their skills over many, many years. And I think it's really important that it's said sometimes that actually a lot of everything you've said, absolutely. There's also a bit of luck in there, by the way. It's luck on the desk that you work on. I do think that, I genuinely do. But it's down to hard work as well as everything else.
I completely agree. And I think I've done a couple of posts on LinkedIn about this recently, and they haven't been well received by all quarters. But I think that hard work is essential. Like, hard work will get you a long, long way without a skill set. And I put something the other day that if there's people that are doing better than you or achieving more, it's because of two reasons. Either they've got a more advanced skill set than you, so they've got all that stuff we're talking about, you know, ratios and how to communicate, or they just work harder than you. And you can do something about both of those things. You can consume content, all that stuff. Go and learn some, like, information has never been so readily available in human history, right?
Literally.
You can go and learn anything. A mate of mine built a gym in his back garden from YouTube, right? So you can learn to do anything from the internet. So that's available to you. And then the hard work is just down to you. Just do more. And if you combine the two of high quality activity and you're doing loads of it, good stuff will happen. But it's, like you said, it's an unpopular opinion sometimes, because
it is with, and it'll be the woke, those that are over woke. About toxic positivity, and, you know, we're not promoting anything other than a harmonised white world. Like, by the way, when I started my recruitment career in the 90s, and I still class myself as a top biller, because I know that in the trajectory of RectorX, I know my billing versus other RectorX, and I know I'm some top biller within the RectorX market, but I was a top biller out of 500 consultants. But I would get there for about 7:30 in the morning. We didn't start until 8:00. That was purely to beat the traffic. I went for an hour's lunch every day, and I was out that door at 6:00 every night, and everyone else would be sat there till 8, 9 o'clock at night, and they couldn't understand why I was top biller and they weren't. And it was because of my work ethic in the hours that I sat there. It was because I made more phone calls. And the word that I love, which I think I might have to call this podcast, curiosity. I couldn't devour enough information for my candidates and my clients. There was no question I felt too embarrassed to ask. I wasn't trying to be an engineer, which is what I did at the time. Just have no shame in asking questions. And I think the downside to all the information that we have available to us is that we're too lazy to ask questions, you know, and we shouldn't be. We shouldn't assume anything at any stage in the process. And I think that some of the best billers I've seen are those who relentlessly want to continue to learn and will never stop asking the questions.
Yeah, I think that's so true in so many different ways as well of I think there's a lot of, and I'm guilty, I definitely had this when I first started. I did mechanical design engineering when I first started doing
it. Me too. We probably competed with each other.
Probably. but I knew nothing, right? I didn't know anything, and I didn't want the people on the other end of the phone to know that I knew nothing. So what it did, it meant that I was reluctant to ask those curiosity questions of, like, wow, like, tell me more about that. Like, what does that mean? It's... Whereas actually, if you lean into that and embrace it, like, so much good stuff comes back your way.
Oh, I leaned in. Jamie, I leaned in so much that they would come and draw stuff for me. Because I used to meet all my engineers, and then I'd have them drawing shafts and valves and all sorts. And I still to this day wouldn't understand the clue what they're doing. But they were so excited to show me, because I was just like, how does that work? I don't understand. Yeah. So I think that's a brilliant way to finish. Lean in to what you don't know, because then, believe it or not, you'll end up knowing it. I just think, I genuinely think that. We could talk for days, couldn't we, Jamie? Have you enjoyed, by the way, this was Jamie's first ever podcast appearance, which I've forgotten to mention that at the start. I normally say this is someone's podcast cherry, but I think you've done brilliantly. How's it gone for you?
Wonderful. Yeah, it's the first of three over the next 2 months. So thank you for popping my cherry.
You're welcome. Well, you've been an absolute delight. So for anyone who wants to know more, make sure you connect to and follow Jamie over on LinkedIn. Thank you so much to Simon Lewis for hosting the original event that connected me and Jamie together. We'll make sure we're tagging Simon. And thank you, Jamie, for joining us on the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast. We are thrilled to welcome to the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast a new partner in Keybridge IT. Keybridge provide 24/7 support to all of their customers. Established in 2010, Keybridge IT Solutions is a London-based, fully managed IT support and solutions provider. And for recruiters like me, we all need the IT expert to sort our problems out, whether it's with Microsoft Cloud, Microsoft 365, internet connectivity, security, Microsoft Azure. I mean, all these words actually mean nothing to me. What about you? But so much more than that. They work across many industries, not just recruitment, but if you're listening from the world of leisure or charity or finance or even marketing, they will be able to help. So click on the link in the podcast show and get to know Keybridge IT. We are so proud to be partners of Needy, the gifting revolution. Here at Key Recruitment, we absolutely love to send out bespoke gifts to our new place candidates to welcome them in their new jobs, but also as an extra special thank you to clients or when a team is celebrating something really special. But to be honest, we were really fed up with dull or mediocre gifts that you could just buy on the high street that didn't really reflect who we are at Key Recruitment as a business. This is why we chose Needy. Needy source sustainably from the UK's best independent businesses, offering the most perfect array of bespoke gifts and experiences too. So no more boring bottles of plonk or rubbish boxes of chocolates. This is how you make your customers' day with a gift that really matters and shows that you really want to do something special for them. For more information on how psychology and AI forming to make the best gift experience for you, click on the link and remember to mention the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast when ordering. The Recruiters Recruitment Podcast is thrilled to be partnering with Inclusion Crowd. Inclusion Crowd put the D into diversity, but do it disruptively. We love that. Really reflecting what we're about. I was introduced to Inclusion Crowd back in 2020, and I've been absolutely blown away with what they're doing to totally transform the recruitment and hiring sector. They believe at Inclusion Crowd that companies should be reflective of society, and that no matter who you are listening now, you have a story to tell. You have a contribution to make. An Inclusion Crowd educates you in allowing your voice to come out and share that story, but doing it in a way that educates your colleagues and your customers equally. Inclusion Crowd, like the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast, has clients all over the world, and they specialize in our industry. What we all want to do together is to maintain best practice and to raise industry standards to enable us to attract and retain the best talent, but doing so inclusively and with true diversity. By doing this, by accomplishing a true EDI policy within your business, you will also retain the top talent as well as attract new talent, which is a win-win for everybody listening, making more profitable business and a much better industry, highly regarded. Inclusion Crowd are also the official awarding body for the Inclusion and Diversity Certification Mark within recruitment. We are so proud to be assisting and partnering Inclusion Crowd. If you want to know more information, please click on the link in this episode and remember to mention the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast when you do so. Now, back to the episode.